T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Follow the show on Twitter at OMF on WEEI.
Everybody applaud me on Twitter. Yeah.
It's OMF on WEEI.
I am told that the NFLPA informed the Board of Representatives in a call this afternoon that the NFL has proposed escrowing 35% of players' salaries throughout the 2020 season to account for some costs and potential lost revenue because of COVID-19. Now, how was the union responding to that? Don Davis, one of the union executives, said in a call with all players a short time ago, basically, we told them to kick rocks.
That was Tom Pelissero. I read you that tweet earlier, but the man he mentioned, Don Davis, is joining us right now on the Harbor One Hotline, Senior Director of Player Affairs for NFLPA.
Ooh, what a cool title.
Yeah, it is a cool title. Don, thanks for joining us. How are you?
Hey, I'm very well. Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Look at you. Look at you with your big title of making news. Yeah. Look at you. Look at how smooth are you.
I know. I try to stay under the radar. This is the first time. Here's the good news, Christian. I have managed to be there for 10 years, and this is the first time that I've actually been somewhat front and center. So I guess that's a good thing.
I think it has to do with the whole kick rocks.
Good comment,
you know, comment, I think, is what got everybody's antenna going up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have to always consider that there is someone listening. And sometimes when you're talking to your, you know, your members, then that gets lost in translation. So, I mean, it is what it is. I think all players understand exactly the positioning and what they want and, you know, some of the way that they feel about when they're asked to take a pay cut. Typically that is the reaction, right? So nobody should really be surprised about that, right? Anytime you're in a contract dispute or you're asked to take less money, I think that's your first reaction, all of us. So
yeah, Don, and you know, maybe just the former baseball player in me, I saw this thing unfolded the last couple of months with Major League Baseball, kind of a similar negotiation type of thing. And I guess the question would be is you know, I know what the baseball union is like. I mean, how far do you go with this thing? Is it more players speak up and this becomes contentious?
Well, I think anytime you're in a labor and management disagreement, contract negotiation, I think you have two sides that tend to be on opposite sides, right? They tend to be divergent. However, I think both sides understand the dynamics that are in play, and neither side could have predicted or prepared for what we are currently experiencing with this novel and emerging virus called COVID-19. And I think it's in both of our interests to continue to discuss it and figure out ways to mitigate losses to the game. But I think that first and opening ask was a bit outrageous.
Yeah, and I think so too, because I just think the NFL, the league is trying to take advantage of the situation. So the 1 year that the league might, now you put that in quotes, might not be profitable, the league wants the players to help absorb some of that loss. Like, hey, suddenly we're all in this together, right? Yeah. I just thought that was a little odd to me.
And again, I'm not, although we tend on either side, when you're on the side, you think you're the good side and you call the other side the bad side. So I'm not trying to insinuate that. But what I would say is, I guess if from a management perspective, well, I mean, it seems like a fair and reasonable offer. So I guess if maybe I was on that side and I happen to be an owner, maybe that seems like a fair and reasonable offer to me. And, you know, so that's where they started at. And you kind of see where what our reaction was to that.
Yeah, and, you know, I look at the NFL players and I think of the careers, right? I think of the contracts, and some of them it's just paper money. It means nothing. It's about guaranteed dollars. These guys' careers maybe aren't as long as maybe other sports. And so I can understand the reaction from guys like Michael Thomas or, you know, who tweeted things out. But other guys, I don't think anybody likes to lose money. And I always joke around saying, you know, even the player is, mama's not happy about giving up that money either. So no player's happy.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think anyone, like I said, no matter what industry you're in, nobody wants to take a pay cut. And, you know, I think we have to be sensitive also to what's going on. What is the national conversation, right? Where people are being furloughed off their jobs or let go, right? And so laid off. So I think trying to balance that and not trying to put this out in public, but that's just the way we are right now. It's kind of the society we live in. Everything plays out on a national stage, so you have to balance all of that. And you know, and again, it's a negotiation, so we'll see where we net out.
Don, with that said, can you learn anything with how Major League Baseball handle it? Because I agree, I think it's tough to stay out of the public, but it just seems like privately, you're probably going to come to some kind of an agreement. But like Major League Baseball did a lot of PR damage over the month and a half by playing this thing out because people just want leverage. They want everyone on their side. How much will you learn from what happened with MLB?
Well, I think what you do is you look at, first of all, how the CBAs are set up. And there are some different nuances between the sports and their CBAs. And that in and of itself may create leverage either way, right? How a CBA is written. And mm-hmm. So I think you take all the information in. You absolutely look at other sports, right? Because all the major sports are dealing with this. And I guess fortunately for the NFL, the players, is that baseball and basketball and hockey get to go first, right? So you get to learn maybe from some things that are happening. Mm-hmm. And you see how they apply in your situation. So, you know, I think that's only natural. And, yes, all those kind of things are happening.
All right, so we're talking to Don Davis, former NFL vet, former New England Patriot, Super Bowl champ, and senior director of player affairs for the NFLPA. Wow.
Cool headline.
Man, that's a lot on a card right there. So, Don, do you have an idea of the amount of money that is generated from fans in the stands for each team? Is there a percentage that you can put on that?
It's hard to say, Christian. I think that what you do have, what we know is we have our revenue system that we have and how the split goes. The players, when it comes to, it's split in basically three buckets. There's a media bucket. There is a NFL ventures or properties bucket. And there is a local bucket. The local bucket, which the players take the least percentage of, which is 40% of those profits of that revenue, that is where the fans and the stands falls in under. So that whole, all of those three buckets for us equate to a 47 cents on the dollar, 47 and a half cents on every dollar. And I mean, I think that out of that bucket, right, a percentage of that deals with local.
So what
you're going to deal with.
So that bucket being the fans, the players get the least amount of that. But that's a way for the NFL owners to recoup more money because they get more of that. So they want to push that and keep that.
You would think so, right?
Yeah. Why they want to keep it. So the other thing is that the other issue that I had that I think is interesting is this this debate going back and forth about, you know, preseason safety, how many games should they play. You know, you're a guy that was a special teams guy and those games were important to you. So I just don't see how it's realistic how they could act, how the NFLPA could actually push for no preseason games when everybody knows that roster development and, you know, development of a players and finding players is kind of what preseason is for.
Yeah. And I think sometimes when you have arguments inside of football, that's the practical nature, right? And then you try to take it up another level to a higher 10,000 square foot level. And so I think in football, and if you stay in football and in that paradigm, then yes, practically that seems to make no sense. But when you go at a 10,000 square foot level and you just look at a what reason would say, then what you're saying is, four preseason games are not in the best health and safety of players based on COVID. But guess what? Here's good news. Two are totally fine. That's a tough position to take, right? And particularly, the question isn't we should, in the position of the PA isn't have no games, have no preseason games. That's not the narrative at all. I know that's out there. But the position is, can you tell us how playing four is problematic, but playing two is okay?
But isn't that kind of, isn't it? No, I hear you, but I feel like that's a loaded question in a way. Okay. Because I could just say, all right, evaluate rosters, roster development.
Yeah.
Jobs. Yeah.
How about players themselves? I mean, not having a preseason game. They had those workouts during the week. That became vogue for a while. And some teams had six, really, kind of, if you include those practices. And then it just becomes, am I ready to play the sport? Like, there's going to be a lot of protocols. But when I step on the field, am I ready to perform, to what my capabilities of? And you would think taking all those games away would make that difficult. Yeah.
Maybe, but then if I take it out of NFL and I go to college, no college team plays a preseason game. Mm-hmm. They start right in the season. They have 2 weeks, training camp, boom, start week one. College football is pretty good. Teams win and lose. College players are ready. But now, because we've fallen in the football world, well, football says there's four preseason games. So if you don't have four preseason games, well, how in the hell are you going to play? Well, for 100-plus years, or I'm sorry, even more than that, they've been playing college football under that same system.
Yeah.
So what's the difference?
Yeah, I know. It's a good point, but I would say things have changed as far as, practice time, how long you can be out in the field. So the amount of reps, I think, are at a minimum. But I do agree with that point of view.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, if college can do it, why can't you? And those are young kids. So, Don, we're talking to Don Davis, Senior Director of the Player Affairs for the NFLPA. So what do you think, we're going to have a football season start on time?
Christian, that's a great question. And I think the point that the players are trying to make, many of them, and actually probably most of them, isn't so much as whether it's going to start on time. I think the argument is, what's the best scenario for us to get through to complete a season, no matter how long that is? And I think that's where the preseason argument comes into play. So that's why I said it's not a matter of canceling the preseason. What it is a matter of is, with 19 states on the rebound, coming back up, being infected, with states now putting mandatory 14-day quarantines, non-travel to certain states, all of these things, does it make sense to be heading into the headwinds of all of that and not understanding exactly where that, not being able to predict exactly what's going to happen? Does it, and saying that, because of that, it's not safe for your fans who can physical distance from each other. It's not safe for them to come to the games. But guess what? The gladiators on the field who play the contact sport with a contact disease, they'll be just fine. That's, I think, the argument or the question, and that's why some of the way that the NFLPA and the players are looking at this, that's where it comes from, that paradigm.
Don, do you think that the league has the best interests of the players in mind right now?
That's a great question, and so I'm trying to figure out,
that's a loaded question.
Well, I'll rephrase it. I'll say it in a way where you can protect yourself. What do you have to see in order to believe that the league has your being the NFL players, current players, best interest at heart?
Now, that's a great question. We have a joint committee that many joint committees that have provided recommendations as to what constitutes risk mitigation and what's the best and safest way for players to play. One of those committees is our return to work committee. That committee jointly hired folks from both sides, came up with a schedule that we called an acclimation period schedule, what their goal was if everybody was in light of COVID, and we have to assume the lowest common denominator, that a guy who's living in a state that's locked down and hasn't been able to do anything but push-ups and sit-ups and run outside, would it take to safely protect that player, lowest common denominator, to get ready for one game? They came up with a six-week and a half ramp-up period that starts with test, that has three basic kind of areas. There's testing that starts out pre. There's strength and conditioning that happens for a time with all these measures and all these protocols. And then you go into like an OTA kind of period, and then get to contact integration where you finally get to your football opportunity. That's 6 weeks. That joint committee put that in place as a recommendation. The NFL had decided that wasn't good enough because we can't do that and fit it in football without canceling the preseason. So because preseason is so important, we're going to cancel the recommendation of the committee that you just signed, that gave their recommendation, and we're going to alter it. And now we're going to do those same periods, but we're only going to do 2 days of here and 3 days of here and more days on the back end. That's one way that you could really say, no, you know what? If we could believe that in the best interest of the players, based on this committee, who is full of experts, not people who are on side arguing, they've had given this schedule, we're going to abide by that schedule. That'd be a big step.
Talking to Don Davis, Senior Director of Player Affairs for the NFLPA. And Don, we saw in baseball they changed their schedule around AL East versus NL East only. They're staying on the East Coast. And I'm curious, you look at the Patriots schedule, they got back-to-back games, Chargers, Rams. They plan on staying out in California for a week. Is it even possible? Could there be a chance that the NFL tries to alter a schedule? Can they even make it regionalized?
That's a great question. They have that based on the CBA. The NFL has that unilateral right to change those games and do what they want to when it comes to that. They can basically schedule up to 16 games in 2020 and up to four preseason games.
That's, is that even feasible in this league? It seems hard to do.
Yeah, you know, it's great. I don't know how feasible it is to do that, but I think that what we do know is that there have been some changes that have happened. Like for instance, when a game was supposed to be in Mexico, right? They ended up switching. When we had hurricanes in certain areas, and they said they moved someplace else. So I don't know how real feasible. I mean, I know that it can be done. Again, I don't know what the pain points would be to do that. I'm sure there will be some.
All right, well, Don, listen, thanks for taking the time. We really appreciate it. Don Davis, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Don. Yeah,
thank you, sir.
You're still looking good, buddy. Still looking like you can play.
You too, my friend.
All right, buddy, thanks.
All right.
Take care.
You got it. Thank you. Don Davis.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.